Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
49 years in the making.
Pete and I are going to go at it right now during this break.
Yeah, well, you're ugly.
Hockey in the playoffs is supposed to be war.
David Back, second round pick for the Blues. They developed him. He ends up signing with the Bruins.
The stars have aligned for this to be one heck of an event.
When we had all the trophies, that was what was on my wall. Maybe a Farrah Fawcett poster.
Took a couple of slugs out of the wall. They're being tested.
Wait a minute.
Get them up. Get up, Billy.
Morning, my friend. How are you?
First, turn the corner from that horrific start. Sale is just dealing right now. You know, Mookie's hitting better.
Mookie Betts with a two-out solo shot.
Yeah, and they're going to get Price back.
I hold all the
cards. The Red Sox have gritted their collective teeth, refusing to give in.
Time for Cordishi and Coit on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Please don't bring Pedroia back.
Your host, Scott Cordishi and Nick Coit.
That was the day for me. Oh, bloody sight.
Welcome back. Hour number two, Cordishi and Coit on Sports Radio 103.7 FM WEEI. He's Nick Coit. I'm Scott Cordishi. All right, so we got some other things to talk about,
other
right?
Stuff.
We talked a lot of Bruins in hour number one, a little Sox, even a little Celtics. Where do you want to start, Mr. Coit, here in hour number two? You want to start with Donovan McNabb's comments?
Well, you know what? Because we kind of teased it. We can touch on it here. If you look at the statistics, Scott, it's not outrageous what he said.
Now, Donovan McNabb told TMZ Sports that he believes he should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, that he's just as deserving as Cowboys Hall of Famer,
yep,
Troy Aikman.
Sure.
And a lot of people are like, crazy, Aikman won 3 Super Bowls, and you didn't win one with Philly. And I agree with you. Look at the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the numbers. 13 seasons in the National Football League, Donovan McNabb, 59% completion percentage, 37,000 plus yards, 234 touchdown passes, 117 interceptions. Troy Aikman, 12 seasons in the NFL, 165 TDs, 141 picks.
Yep.
I mean, big edge to Donovan McNabb.
Big
now,
edge.
Troy Aikman won a few Super Bowls with the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But here's what I'd say about Donovan McNabb. In his 11 seasons with the Philadelphia Eagles, he got them to the playoffs 8 times.
Yep.
5 NFC championship games, including one Super Bowl appearance, a Super Bowl that he lost to the New England Patriots, Super Bowl 39, down in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
But are we to penalize him because he went to 5 NFC championship games and could only win one, and because he didn't win a Super Bowl? Some look at it that way.
Yeah.
I prefer to look at it differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think getting your team to a conference championship game means you did something really good.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Really good.
Teams were good.
I understand a lot of people are going to say, well, maybe the signature moment in his career is puking in the Super Bowl, right? That doesn't help him.
No.
That doesn't help him.
No, I think a lot of people look at championships and nostalgia and as you said, big moments, and McNabb doesn't really have one, but statistically, and I know baseball, their Hall of Fame is more statistical than football or other halls. Like, baseball is just a numbers game. Yeah, but there's the numbers here are, if you compare Aikman and McNabb, there's some big gaps.
Look,
and not only Aikman, but look at other guys that are in the hall,
Kurt
too.
Warner.
Kurt Warner.
His numbers are better than Kurt Warner's.
Jim Kelly, who sort of similar there, Scott? Huh? Didn't Jim Kelly make it to what, 4 straight Super Bowls?
Yep.
And they didn't win one, did they?
Nope.
That's a Hall of Famer.
Look,
it's a Hall of Famer.
Here's what I would say, and I admit I'm a little biased. Donovan's a Syracuse guy. Okay.
Ah,
love
there
him.
We go.
Love him. Okay.
Guy, play the fight song.
I.
There we go.
All right. So look.
I'm puking on my shoes over here.
I think when you compare him to the guys that are in,
yep,
and Aikman and Warner are two of them, I think he deserves to be in.
Yeah.
Because if the standard to be in the Hall of Fame is you have to have Super Bowl rings on your fingers, well, Dan Marino's in.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying he's as good as Dan Marino. Dan Marino's one of the all-time greats, but Dan Marino made it 2-1 and lost the only Super Bowl that he played in.
Sure.
Okay?
Well, and he probably would have had one if he hadn't been kidnapped and the whole dolphin and snowflake and rescued by Ace Ventura and whatnot. But that's here nor there. Don't worry about that. Anyways, continue.
So, you know, people think that Donovan McNabb made an outrageous statement. I don't believe that he did.
Yeah. No, I don't think so either. I think he absolutely has a case. And good for him for having, just knowing that, he made that statement knowing that he was going to probably spark a debate and people are going to look at it and say, oh, that's not that crazy. Huh. That's funny.
It isn't that crazy.
No, it's not. Good for him for backing up his resume. So yeah, I'm with you.
I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
There he goes.
And this doesn't hurt, of course, that he is a Syracuse Orange Men, right? They weren't the Orange when he played. They were the Orange Men. Come on, sing it with me, Nick.
You're going to make my mic limp again by slamming on the table over there, Orange Man.
Down, down the field is the name of the fight song right there.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know that, and it's not something I ever wanted to know, but thank you for that, Scott. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let's get to the baseball text, please.
Yeah, you know what? And kudos to the person who sent this in from the 401.
Yeah.
Early thoughts on the job that Rocco Baldelli is doing.
Oh, he's been fantastic.
How about the Minnesota Twins under Rocco?
Man.
Good for him.
Oh, yeah. These guys are playing really, really well. This is why they hired Rocco. He's just got this young sort of blood, and he's such an intelligent guy. You knew that he had a great baseball mind, so to put him there with some of the younger guys there, and yeah, they're playing really, really well. And I think it's a good time, too, because I think that division, as good as Cleveland has been with Francona, I think this was the time where, you know, if the Twins come out and they pounce, they were going to give them a run for their money, and they obviously have. And yeah, good for the Twinkies and good for Rocco, man. Good
Best
for him.
Best record in baseball for
awesome.
Rocco Baldelli and the Minnesota Twins. Good for him.
Awesome.
I agree. Great guy. Someone you definitely root for. He played the game the right way, and I wish him nothing but the best. They're off to a great start in his rookie season as manager.
Well, and again, these are guys that are not too far removed. Alex Cora was a guy. He's not too far removed from the game in his playing days.
Yep.
And he only had a little bit of experience, you know, as an assistant, as a bench coach, whatnot. And then he's thrown in, he wins a World Series, and he's able to relate with his players. And I think Rocco is of that mold, you know, not too far removed from the game. He's got some coaching experience. And this was a guy that everybody around baseball said, like, you need to hire him as a manager. He's going to make a great manager someday. You know, there's that old clip of Joe Buck during the 07 World Series when the Red Sox were playing and talking about Alex Cora, and he said, you know, Terry Francona says he's going to be a manager someday. They were saying the same thing about Rocco because of how intelligent he is with the game. And so, it's to me, it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise. Good for him.
All right, and then there's the Ed Cooley story, and this thing really blew up this past week. We learned that Ed Cooley was Michigan's top choice to replace John Beilein as their new men's basketball coach, to the point where Cooley interviewed and was offered the job, we understand, but Cooley decided to stay at Providence College, and I think much to the relief of most Friar fans.
I don't, hey, good for Ed for taking the call, and I think who had the best insight on this after reading his article was Kevin McNamara, and it's no surprise because he's been covering the Friars for years, and he got some, if you read his article about how it all went down, you know, to me, it came off as Bob Driscoll, the AD at Providence, I think Bob knew that Ed had gotten interest and gotten a call from Michigan, and Bob was kind of like, well, it's Michigan. You got to take the call. Take the call. You know, answer the call. Talk to them. You know, to credit to him for saying that, because that's the kind of relationship that Cooley and Bob Driscoll and Father Shanley have, is that, you know, okay, you take the call, you listen to it, you have the interview. You know, I believe they went down there and met with him, because the AD met with him from Michigan because he was going down to talk to Juwan Howard as well. And Ed Cooley is down in Florida for the Big East meetings earlier this week. So, you know, he talked to them, he interviewed with them, and then he talked to Providence and said, okay, you know, what, this is what they want to do, whatever, but we got a good thing going here. The mission is clear. We're on the same page. Can you throw me a couple more bones, whatever, and here you go. You know, you're going to stick around. The next day they come out, multi-year extension, even though he had a quote-unquote lifetime contract anyways, but it was sort of like, all right, we're sweetening the pot, making sure that Ed's staying. And I think the reason that Ed had no problem staying is because, and I give credit to the Providence College administration right now, they've invested in the program. They realize what they have with Ed Cooley as the face of their program. They've taken care of him. They've put in a new practice facility. They've made this program a contender in the Big East. And that's why Ed had no problem saying, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to continue to coach the Friars.
All right, three things from my perspective on this. Number one, why listen to Michigan? As you just pointed out, as Bob Driscoll said, it's Michigan, right?
Michigan.
Okay, that is a program that you can compete for and win a national championship at.
Yes.
Okay? That is, they are in a Power 5 conference. That is a big-time football school, so they have the football money to go along with the basketball money to do whatever they want. Charter everywhere. You know, it's big time.
Yep.
You can compete for national championships at the University of Michigan.
Not to mention with the money thing, you know, the TV network, too, is probably going to give them money as well.
And when you bring up money, and it's part of the equation, okay, Ed Cooley here was making just under $3 million, okay? I don't know what this new deal calls for, but let's say it's in the ballpark of $3 million a year. Probably would have doubled that salary there, right? So you're probably talking in the $5 to $6 million a year range. So essentially, you sign a five-year contract there, it's what you're getting paid for 10 years at Providence. So, okay, those are the reasons why you say, okay, why do you listen to Michigan? You know why. I just laid that out. Now, number two, why stay at Providence? Well, number one, this is home for him and his wife.
Yes.
Okay?
That's just got a degree last Sunday from the school.
Yep. Number two, as you correctly pointed out, Providence College has done everything in their power to make this a program that can compete on the national level with the biggest and best. And that's, you know, signing Ed Cooley to the big and long-term contract. It's building that beautiful practice facility. It's upgrading all of the athletic facilities, really. I mean, they've really made a commitment to athletics up there, and it's a credit to them. So they have done everything in their power as this little school, this small private university, to really up their game and to have them competing on a level playing field on a national level. And then there's, you know, there's the third thing. I've had some Friar fans say to me,
I knew you were going to get to
that.
I'm with you.
You know, it's one of those things, be careful what you wish for because, you know, now he comes back, he gets this lucrative contract, and some Friar fans will look at it as, well, he was just using that as leverage to get more money out of Providence, who was already treating him very well. Look, he's done a great job here.
Mm-hmm.
A great job. But his critics will say, well, what's he done in the NCAA tournament? And so now, does that pressure build on him to not just get to the NCAA tournament, which he did for 5 years in a row, which was unprecedented for
3.7 WEEI. We now return to Cordishy and Coit.
All right, welcome back.
That's perfect.
Perfect.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
All right, let's bring in our man who is on the Red Sox beat, also covers college basketball for the Providence Journal, Bill Koch. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Boy, where is John Rook? He would approve of this sort of thing.
Of course he would.
He wouldn't stop talking. You wouldn't get any words in during the interview. You know, I was the original voice of the Texas women's basketball team back in the day. And you know,
very good. Yeah. Very good.
I spent too much time around that guy.
Yeah. No, did he tell you about his days? He was a member of the band at the University of Texas.
Oh, no, I've heard everything about his Longhorns days, believe me.
Oh, yeah. Former pupil of his in Emerson.
I'm a rookie.
I worked with John for many years.
Oh boy.
At WPRO, at the Score, and here at WEEI.
He'll tell you all about Texas, which is where we find Bill Koch this morning.
Good morning, Bill.
One of these days, you know, the next time I see John, maybe he'll be kind enough to tell me exactly what chicken fried steak is, because that's what they served in media dining, and I ate it. It was decent. But I have absolutely no idea what was under that breading.
Oh.
Well, it was supposed to be some kind of steak.
Yeah, right. I don't know what
no
it was.
No clue.
Oh, boy. All right.
All right, let's start with, we have one college basketball question. Well, maybe a couple before we get to the Red Sox. We had a texter text us, wanted to know about any non-league home opponents for Providence or Brown. Do you know of any non-league home opponents for the Friars this upcoming winter?
No, not sure. I want to say that they're in the Big East, Big Ten Challenge.
I think you're right. I think you're right this year. I think,
I'm really not sure.
Yeah, okay. But it comes out fairly soon from some of these schools, doesn't it, Bill? I think last year it was around June-ish where the non-conference stuff was coming out.
Well, most coaches want to have their schedule done before they start recruiting in the summer.
Okay,
that's probably the second most difficult thing that they have to do is put together a schedule, and especially for programs like Providence, who are going to have some good league games that are going to help their strength schedule, but they're going to need at least two or three non-conference opportunities to bolster that. So they're definitely, looking out for some quality opponents. And I think, Ed Cooley would want to wrap that up sooner rather than later.
I can tell you this, because he asked about Brown as well. Off the top of my head, I think they have like NJIT coming here because they played there last year. They have Navy coming up here. They played in Annapolis last year. The big one on their schedule for Brown is URI is going to be playing at the Pizzatola Sports Center this winter. So that will be the big, quote-unquote, non-league home game for Brown.
Well, and then the big one away is Brown's going to Duke.
That is correct.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yep.
For Rhodey, too, Bill, they've got a pretty – David Cox has been working hard to put together a pretty tough non-conference schedule from what I remember. Aren't they at Maryland this year?
They're at Maryland. They also play in the Jamaica Classic. LSU is the headliner there.
Wow.
Some really tough non-conference tests for URI, and it's definitely something that they should be doing. You have Jeff Doughton and Cyril Langevin as seniors. I'm sure that they feel like this could be an NCAA tournament team, and they've scheduled accordingly.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Bill, what you think of the whole Ed Cooley story, talking to Michigan, turning the Wolverines down, staying at Providence? What was your take on that whole big story that broke this past week?
Well, a couple things. I think Bob Driscoll hit on it. When Michigan calls, you have to take the meeting,
right?
Because they're one of the marquee brands in college basketball, in college sports. Great program. You've seen what John Beilein did there, obviously, going to two national title games. That's a place where, realistically, you could be in the Final Four in any given year if you're doing it right. So, you definitely take the meeting. In Ed's case, you have to gauge, quality of life decisions, whether you want to uproot and go there, whether or not the job is worth it, whether or not you can reach some sort of an agreement on a contract. Coaches being who they are, they're always going to back their own abilities. They're always going to feel like they can do the job. Scott, you're around these guys all the time. You know that no challenge is too great. I would say in Providence's case, the speed with which they were able to react to the interest from Michigan, the way that they were able to get this contract extension done and maybe add in some more perks in addition to a raised salary, I think that just speaks to the job that Bob Driscoll has done as the athletic director there, the job that Steve Napolillo has done in terms of athletics development and fundraising. Providence was able to react. They didn't have to waste any time. They had the money in place. They had the two or three calls to major donors that they could make to immediately get the funds to secure Ed Cooley. And I just think that speaks to years and years of an effort by that athletic department to get to where they are now.
Yeah, that's a great point. We're talking with Bill Koch of the Providence Journal. Bill, you were in Houston last night for the series opener for the Red Sox against the Astros. Seemed like Chris Sale had a good night. Scott pointed out only gave up three hits, but Couple of defensive miscues, and just a tough one to take in a one-run ball game.
It was sloppy from Boston. It's that simple. They were, they made mistakes, and Houston doesn't need any help. Really, really good team. You cannot give them extra outs in a given inning, and Boston did that. Three errors in the game. At one point, they had four. There was an infield single that was, changed from an error at third base. Kind of a tough hop on Eduardo Nunez, to be fair. It was probably a good scoring decision in hindsight. It starts right in the second inning. Steve Pierce throws behind Chris Sale. Aledmys Diaz scores all the way from second. You have Xander Bogaerts try to throw the plate on a play where he's coming in and going to his right, and it's an off-balance throw that goes to the backstop, allows another run to score, also allows a runner to move up to third with one out, and they're able to hit a sacrifice fly. Instead of it being the last out of the inning, it scores a run, which ended up being the winning run. Just a sloppy effort from Boston in general, and a little bit discouraging considering that they're coming off 3 out of 4 in Toronto and seem to be building some momentum there.
Bill, what's going to happen? Brock Holt, Dustin Pedroia with the Portland Sea Dogs. What's going to happen when they are ready to return to Boston?
Well, Brock Holt is close. Alex Cora said last night that he feels like Brock Holt is close. He was 0 for 2 last night, which snapped a 6-game hitting streak. So he's obviously seeing the ball pretty well and feeling pretty good. I would think that they're going to go down to 12 pitchers. I think that the roster move would be on that side. They would go back to 13 position players and 12 pitchers. In Pedroia's case, I still think that they want to see him play 4 or 5 days in a row in the field. They want to see him play second base on 4 or 5 days in a row. Maybe see him play a day game after a night game some sort of game after they travel. Because those are the hurdles for Pedroia. I don't think they're as concerned about his results in the minors, so, although I would be. I think they're more concerned about whether or not, if they give him a roster place, that he can be available every day.
Right, and the conundrum too, Bill, is the fact that Michael Chavis has been as good as he's been.
Well, that's the other issue too. I don't see them taking away at bats from anyone in this infield right now for Dustin Pedroia.
No.
Michael Chavis hitting the way that he is, if this continues, and there's no guarantee that it will because he is a rookie and teams will adjust to him at some point, I feel like you need to ride this wave as long as it goes on, until he sort of hits the wall or starts to struggle and might need a couple days off. I think you need to ride this. You're also not going to move Chavis to third base, let's say, because Rafael Devers is hitting the ball really well, and has become a mainstay of that lineup as well. So you could say that you could fit Chavis in other spots, whether it be at first base or as the DH, but I feel like he needs to play every day, and you've also got Steve Pierce emerging a little bit here. He's on a 5-game hitting streak. You might not want to take at-bats away from him against the left-handed pitcher. So in the Red Sox case, if you're Alex Cora and Dave Dombrowski, this is why they make the big bucks, because there are going to be some difficult decisions ahead.
I wonder, and this may sound crazy, but I wonder if a guy like Eduardo Nunez doesn't get DFA'd.
Yeah, he could find himself in a little bit of a jam here. He would be one of the casualties for playing time. Hasn't necessarily been in the lineup all that regularly to begin with. He's in the midst of a one-year deal. It was a player option that he activated after last season. I'm not certain how committed they would be to him going forward. I know Alex Cora values him. You've seen when he's going well, the upside is there. But, if you have Devers and Chavis playing this well and Brock Holt being the true utility guy who can play shortstop, in addition to a corner outfield spot in a pinch, he's probably more value on this roster than Nunez.
In terms of the bullpen, Bill, you know, what can they do to keep things rolling here? Who's a guy that you've liked so far, you know, besides a Matt Barnes that maybe deserves more of an opportunity? And do you believe they do need help there?
Well, I think we're seeing a guy get one, and that's Marcus Walden.
Yeah.
He's been really good so far. Obviously, the blown save against Toronto the other night was the first real hiccup he's had. Through a scoreless inning on Friday against Toronto. I think he's, you know, in his last 21 and two-thirds, I want to say, he's only given up two earned runs. You know, so he's been really good. Has decent stuff, whether it be a mid-90s fastball or slider that he's really worked on over the last couple of years that's made him a pretty tough pitcher. I would say this, though, Nick. You look at the market last year, and you look at some of the relievers that moved, whether it was Jeurys Familia or Ryan Pressly, who's here with Houston now, had his 40-appearance scoreless streak snapped last night by a home run by Jackie Bradley. That was a major league record. You look at so many teams who aren't competing, who are going to hit June and July and decide to strip it down and make some trades. There will be bullpen arms out there, and I think the Red Sox, just because they didn't sign someone this offseason, I don't think that means that they're ignorant to the fact that they might need one more bullpen arm. I think that they'll be in the market for it, and it will be a buyer's market at that time.
Bill, last thing. I said this earlier in the show. I feel like with the way Justin Verlander is throwing the ball this year and him on deck for tomorrow, I feel like the Sox got to win one with David Price tonight. Otherwise, they're going to be swept in Houston.
Yeah, it's an interesting spot, Scott, because last year they had a four-game series here. They lost the first two games and had Verlander in the third game. And I was thinking the same thing at that time. You know, they really need a response here. Otherwise, they could be in big trouble. They managed to outlast Verlander and beat Will Harris, who was out of the bullpen. And then on the Sunday, they hammered Charlie Morton, who was off to a great start last year, ended up being an American League All-Star. Got a split in the series, and it really felt like one of the first sort of markers they laid down on the way to a championship. You know, these are the sorts of starts that David Price lives for. At the very least, you know, he would tell you that he takes pride in going out there when his team really needs him. You know, and whether it's giving innings or giving some sort of quality, you know, he's going to go out there and pitch well. And I think that, you know, in his case, he has good history here recently. You know, obviously through Game 5 of the American League Championship Series here last year. Started to rewrite his postseason narrative, really. You know, the other night in Toronto, he was very good, and you know, I'm sure he would expect to throw the ball the same way.
Bill, as always, great stuff. Thanks for getting up with us this morning with that hour time difference in Houston.
Guys, you got it. Anything for you.
Enjoy the chicken steak, Bill?
Chicken fried steak.
Chicken fried steak.
Okay.
You run that by John Rook next time you see him.
We'll do.
There are a lot of good barbecue joints down in Houston.
I'm sure.
I know that.
See you, Billy.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, guys.
All right, Bill Koch from the Providence Journal wrapping it up for us here on a Saturday morning on Cordishi and Coy. Mark and Kitchen on deck. Coming your way. Thanks to Laura Minicucci for putting this thing together during the week. To Joe Passarelli on the other side of the glass. For Nick Coit, I'm Scott Cordishi. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. This is Cordishi and Coit.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.